Welcome to Topple Uncaged. I'm Steve Topple, and over the next 20 minutes, I'll be bringing you the quickest firing news roundup of the week. I'll be getting down and dirty with a very special guest going through some big stories. I'll be taking a part of this week's question time, and also I'll be bringing you some of the biggest, most banging political tunes going. So, lock and load, people. Let's go.
Uncaged.
Whistle while you work, Hitler is at work, he's half army, so's his army, whistle while you...
Your name will also go on the list. What is it?
Don't tell him, Pike.
Pike.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler?
Don't panic! Don't panic! It's me, Steve Topple. It is Sunday, the 6th of January, 2019. And that can only mean one thing. It's this week's edition of Topple Uncaged. Yes, if you thought that the Conservative government was a bit like Dad's army, then the start of the new year will probably have done little to persuade you otherwise. You had Theresa Captain Mannering May giving the most delusional New Year's speech ever. You had Sajid Corporal Jones Javid making a mountain out of a molehill with the refugee crisis, or as he probably calls them, the Fuzzy Wuzzies. Meanwhile, Jeremy Private Pike Hunt has been spreading fear about Russia again. But don't forget, he probably went out without his scarf. But you can be rest assured that in the next few months, what with Brexit and everything else that is going on in this country, it will be a complete shambles by this government. They don't like it up in the Tories, do they? So let's crack on with this week's show. As always, I will kick off with the quickest news roundup in the UK. Then I will have a very, very, very special guest back for his second appearance in Free Flying With. I will be bringing you one of the lowlights from 2018 from BBC's Question Time. And finally, I have a fantastic musical guest to round off the show. And Sajid Javid, if you're listening, you stupid boy, let's get going. The fastest news segment in the UK, it's Plucked News. Yes, it's the first Plucked News of 2019. Five news stories, 5 minutes. Can I fit them all in? Will I give you all the information you need? Let's find out in 3, 2, 1. Let's go. And first off, we're off to Amber Rudd's Twitter account. And she tweeted on the 1st of January,
"Not usually one for New Year's resolutions, but here are mine. Plus one hope. 1. Make our welfare system work better and fairer for women. 2. Help claimants into work and financial independence. 3. Get help more quickly to those who need it. 4. Less violent discourse in politics."
What? First off, Amber, make our welfare system work better and fair for women. And the same week that the story came out that 85% of people affected by the benefit cap are single mothers. I don't think you're doing a very good job of that so far. Help claimants into work and financial independence. Your policy is to push as many disabled people back into insecure, low-paid, exploitative employment as possible. So, will 2019 see a change in that? I very much doubt it. Get help more quickly to those who need it. What, like the story this week of the man in Universal Credit who was left with 1 pence to survive? Yeah, your track record speaks volumes. Less violent discourse in politics. Maybe if your government and the Department for Work and Pensions weren't so violent towards claimants and everyone else in the first place, there wouldn't be such an aggressive form of politics about at the minute. People react to what they see before them. At the minute, we have a nefarious, evil, cruel and vindictive government. So no wonder people are angry. And next off, we're off to BBC News, and they reported that top boss pay overtakes staff in 3 days, report says. This is, of course, all about Fat Cat Friday, where bosses of the top 100 FTSE companies will have already earned an average worker's annual salary of £29,574 by January the 3rd. But instead of reporting this as fact, which of course it is, BBC News questioned the whole notion of Fat Cat Friday. They quoted the Adam Smith Institute, a notorious right-wing think tank, as saying if these activist organisations actually cared about workers and not just the politics of envy against our best and brightest, they would talk about ways to which actually increase workers' pay. Trying to make out that Fat Cat Friday is some left-wing conspiracy theory is absolutely ridiculous. Look at Bet365, the boss of whom owned £265 million last year. I worked out that it was over 12,000 times more than her workers on minimum wage. But of course, the problem comes back to the fact that this inequality is embedded in capitalism. It is a fault in the system. And if and when a Jeremy Corbyn government gets in, they need to do more to address this and just increase a higher rate of tax and increase the minimum wage. We have an issue embedded in our system and it needs to be addressed and urgently. Otherwise, Fat Cat Friday is only going to get worse year in, year out. And for story number 3, I'm off to the Evening Standard, and they reported that Greg's Vegan Sausage Roll launches this Veganuary following Peter petition. This is, of course, a furore surrounding Greg's daring to launch a vegan sausage roll. It even had Piers Morgan tweeting incredulously about it. But of course, the bigger story here is Veganuary, the month where everyone should at least try and go vegan. Look, while I'm all for the ethical treatment of animals, and I believe slaughterhouses should have the highest of standards possible, I think Veganuary is about a far bigger issue than just turning away from the meat industry. It needs to be focusing on the effect this notorious business has on our planet. For example, did you know that 15% of all greenhouse gas emissions come from the meat industry? Our love affair with beef, chicken and lamb is only going to lead to disaster. However, what are the other options? We can go ethically sourced and try and get our products from sustainable local growers, or of course we can go for the plant-based vegan option. But of course, if you look at that, Alpro, who produce plant-based milk alternatives, are just an extension of Danone, the huge dairy manufacturer. So even going vegan isn't really an option, because you're just then playing into the meat industry anyway. For me, this is just another cog in the corporatist capitalist wheel, and it's one that needs to be brought down. We need to move away from the mass agriculture that we see at the minute and working towards sustainable living. And I'm afraid that doesn't necessarily for me mean going vegan. And for story number four, I'm off to The Independent, and they reported that student drug dealers spared jail after judge impressed by flawless grammar. This is the story of two students from Wales who were spared jail by a judge after he commented how good their spelling, punctuation and grammar was in the text messages they were sending to each other trying to score. Now, I'm not sure where quite to begin with the story, not least the fact we're still criminalising people for possession of drugs, and we shouldn't be sending people to jail anyway for it. But of course, if you flip this story on its head, it's the fact that certain demographics in society are spared jail when others would be quickly banged up. What am I talking about here? Of course, the fact that quite often the colour of your skin and your postcode dictates whether you're sent to prison or not when it comes to drug-related crime. We often have a two-tier justice system in this country where black and ethnic minority people are penalised far heavier than their white counterparts. But anyway, aside from it all, the government even includes drug money in its GDP now. What we should be doing is stopping penalising people for the use of drugs, stop taking a criminal justice approach to it, and look at it from a health perspective. And finally, I'm off to the Canary, and my mate Freya Lockley, and she reported that 2 years on, and there are more Daniel Blakes in the UK than ever before. This is, of course, the news that I, Daniel Blake, by Ken Loach, was shown on BBC Two on Saturday the 5th of January. But Freya's take on it, and it is a must-read article, I can recommend it really highly, Freya's take on it is the fact that things have actually got worse since the film was first ever released. And who can disagree with her? Poverty up, homelessness up, the DWP more and more out of control. I'm not convinced Ken Loach could have even begun to have imagined the chaos that would have ensued 2 years after his film was first released in cinemas. But of course, with the Tory government still in charge, what would we expect? In some respects, the film wasn't even as bad as things really are in society, and I think in 2019 we are only going to see things getting worse. Ken Loach, if you're listening, you may need to make a version number two, because trust me, things are going to go from bad to horrific. And having had time to talk about the army launching a new recruitment campaign targeting millennials, have you seen these fucking posters? They are in part absolutely hilarious, but also in part very, very scary. Seriously guys, if you think by recruiting people because they're snowflakes or gaming addicts is going to actually get you people into the army, you must be sorely mistaken. Delusional doesn't even begin to cover it. And I can't even mention the fact that notorious fracking firm Quadrilla has denied to me personally in a statement that it's withdrawing operations from the Preston New Road site. Nope, nothing to see here guys. Not the fact that your parent company AJ Lucas with 47% shareholding stake has seen its value plummet over the past 3 months since earthquakes started. Nope, nothing to see here Quadrilla, you're so dodgy it's unbelievable. And handing that time to discuss my brilliant mate Alex Tiffin at Respected Vital on Twitter doing a lovely expose into the industry and parliamentary trust and all the companies that have been donating to the so-called charity run by peers, MPs and civil servants. It is staggering. The list is like a who's who of the dodgy in this country. But perhaps the best response was this from Morpheus Fire, who tweeted, "It's like a who's who of Britain's biggest cunt farm." How apt. Seriously, check out Alex's Twitter feed. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And I haven't even had time to talk about the Brexit ferry madness, where they lifted the terms and conditions from a pizza delivery site. If you thought I was taking the piss when I said that the government is getting more and more like Dad's Army as the days pass, it's actually getting more like a Carry On film with this debacle. Carry on cruising, shut your porthole and your cake hole. And that's it, Pluck News done for another week. I'm going to smoke 20 cigarettes, have a Red Bull, and then get on with the next part of the show. Dissecting this week's top stories, it's me, Free Flying, with... I am very excited to have back on my podcast again for the second time since we started. It is the irrepressible lawyer-turned-campaigner, Peter Stevanovic. Peter, thank you for coming back on.
Happy New Year, Steve. It's lovely to be back on the first show of the new year. What a year this is going to be.
Wow, yes. Happy New Year to you too, obviously, Peter. And I think history will not view this year kindly. I have this feeling it's going to be quite a year. But let's kick things off. So, as always, with Free Flying With, we have one story which I've picked, one story which you've picked, and one story which was decided by a Twitter poll. Now, the Twitter poll this week was very close. We came in at 36% for one story and 35% for another story. So me and Peter have decided to bookend the segment with a few minutes on two topics that have been picked.
Being a democracy is the right thing to do, wasn't it, Steve?
Well, Peter, if we were in a democracy as it is in this country, we would have committed some sort of fraud to get the story we wanted wanted to be discussed about, wouldn't we? So let's crack on anyway. And the first story we're going to kick off with is the ongoing saga of Labour and Brexit and Jeremy Corbyn's position. Now, an opinion poll has been touted around the media, hasn't it, about the members' support for Corbyn and Labour's position on Brexit. A lot of the media has misrepresented this, though. How much more of this negative bias against Corbyn's Brexit position can you actually take, Peter? Because it's getting relentless, isn't it?
How much can I take? I don't know. You know what? I think the public is intelligent enough to see through this. They know Theresa May and her incomprehensibly incompetent government have made a complete hash of the Brexit negotiations. They know that we're now being railroaded up to a cliff edge economic catastrophe of their own making. And all this negative media stuff against Corbyn is just a sad, desperate attempt to cause a Brexit uprising against him in order to deflect attention away from their own utter ineptitude. You remember Corbyn rightly pointed out that the final PMQs before Christmas, it's Theresa May and her ministers that are conducting the Brexit negotiations, not Corbyn and his shadow cabinet, which is kind of pretty unfortunate given where we are. But that's the situation. So, how much more can I take? You know, just bring it on. It's laughable. I think enough said on that.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you on that. And I mean, as I've said in the past on various other platforms, my position on this is clear. We should follow Labour's position and there should be a general election on this because it's no longer about the question of leave or remain for me. It's about the fact that under the Tory government, it's been an absolutely chaotic process. And then that's what needs to change. It's not the actual decision. It is who is in charge of the process that needs to change. So general election, please. So what also will probably be in chaos in 2019 is the Department for Work and Pensions. Now, I wrote a story this week on the New Year's Honours List and the fact that eight members of the Department of Work and Pensions, DWP, had been given gongs by the Queen in the New Year's list of people who should be recognised. Should the DWP senior civil servants even be getting gongs after the chaotic and absolutely abysmal year the department had?
I mean, I'll tell you, Steve, my blood ran cold. Literally ran cold when I heard this. And, you know, I mean, let's remember, thousands of people have died within weeks, sometimes days of being certified fit to work and having their benefits stopped. And I remember a story last year about this poor guy who actually died on his way home from a job centre after being found fit to work.
That was it was Lawrence Bond, wasn't it? He had a heart attack after he left.
Awful. And just a few weeks back, we had a report, I think it was in The Independent, which found nearly 50% of women trying to claim benefits had attempted suicide. Yes. We've got people with mental health problems being sanctioned, stripped of their benefits, you know, leaving them with no money to buy food or pay for heating. We've had at least 75,000 disabled people forced to give up their adapted cars. Yes. And you reported quite recently on the number of people winning benefit appeals, that being at an all-time high. So what does that tell us about those people turning down claims and stripping people of benefits in their first place? So taking all that into account, and in answer to your question, dishing out awards and congratulating DWP staff, no matter what the circumstances, and I know that there may be, you know, circumstances that need to be taken into account, but my view is no matter what the circumstances, when people have actually died, when people have been forced into poverty, when they've gone hungry, when you've had to watch your children go hungry, it's just obscene to then have these awards dished out and to have Tory ministers gloating about it right after, you know, we had a whole bunch of them using local food banks for food opportunities just a few weeks ago. So I think the whole thing is just despicable. I don't think that there are any circumstances in which this can be justified given where we are right now today.
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, you've kind of summed it up completely for me, as it were. My position on the DWP is fairly clear, and I don't often sort of say it in its most basic terms, but for me, one person who dies as a result of a government policy is one person too many. It should be as simple as that. There can be no other explanation, apart from the fact it is conscious cruelty. Someone else, another entity, who will probably continue to be rampant this year, is Theresa May, of course. Now, this took me aback. Her New Year's speech, welcoming in 2019. You did a brilliant video ripping this to shreds. What was your worst part, Peter? What was the bit which really stuck in your throat?
I mean, the thing is, you're kind of really putting me on the spot there, Steve, because it's difficult to pick one bit that was more odious and delusional than the other. But, I mean, she talked at one point about the rate of employment being at a record high, but she doesn't mention the fact that 60%, a record 60% of Britons in poverty are now actually in working families. Yeah. The number of workers entering poverty is actually rising faster than employment. The Office for National Statistics has confirmed the government's so-called record low unemployment figures include people working just 1 hour every 2 weeks. I mean, just think about that. You work just 1 hour every 2 weeks, and the government says you're employed. I mean, it's no wonder the government says we've got record low unemployment. I've said this many times. The simple fact is Theresa May's record low unemployment is based on record high exploitation of workers. Yes. We've got zero-hours contracts, short-term contracts, poverty wages literally left millions of working families destitute. And you know, the thing is this, Steve, work, you know, whatever that work is, whatever you do, should enable you to sort of flourish and grow, not just survive, not just scrape by from day to day. So of course we got that, but I mean we also have Theresa May talking about the number of people in absolute poverty at a record low. Now I know you're one of those magnificent reporters out there who's covered extensively the UN rapporteur's investigation into extreme poverty and human rights in the UK, and we know he ended his 2-week fact finding mission last year with that declaration that levels of child poverty weren't just a disgrace. He said that they were a social calamity for the country. Now, in a New Year's speech, Theresa May's just completely forgotten the 4 million plus kids living in poverty. 2/3 of them, remember, are in working households. The UN's rapporteur found 14 million people, that's a fifth of the population, living in poverty. 14 million. 1.5 million destitute, meaning they can't even afford basic essentials. And to cap all that off, life expectancy for the poorest groups of British society has actually fallen for the first time since the Second World War. So the reality is we ended 2018 with soaring poverty, soaring homelessness, hundreds of people dying on our streets, soaring malnutrition, and Theresa May gave us that delusional New Year's speech. Totally, totally delusional. Contemptible.
I think that's the point. Yes, while it is obviously delusional, it's an intentional. They know what they're doing, as it were. We were talking just very briefly to wrap this up. Before we move on to the final story, we were talking about this off air, as it were, about how the message sort of the left and the message that people like you and I put out, whether it's actually breaking through down to the general public. We sort of said we think in 2019 the likes of you and I and others will need to do more to get the message past the social media bubble and past people who are already politically active, as it were. Do you think, I mean, Theresa May's delusions and her contempt and her essentially manipulation of the situation, do you think that is still washing with a lot of the public who aren't politically motivated?
I mean, we absolutely cannot become complacent in what we're doing and complacent about getting our messaging out. But we are breaking through. There's no doubt about that. We have a lot of work to do. We can't get complacent. We have to keep going.
No, absolutely. I completely agree. To finish up, Peter, just a couple of minutes on our final story, which was, of course, the situation with refugees who are trying to get across the channel to find a better life in this country. And Sajid Javid, the Home Secretary, is contemptible. Again, another Tory being contemptible. Shock, horror. His contemptible response questioning whether these people are genuine refugees. Do you think this kind of inhumanity that we see from the Conservatives, which is sort of encapsulated by Sajid Javid, but also Theresa May's speech, actually, is this going to get worse this year?
I mean, just when you think the government and its ministers cannot become any more odious and detestable than they already are, then they manage to rise to the occasion. And this is another example. And yeah, we've got to put this story into perspective, Steve. 4 million adults were forced to use food banks in 2018. But according to the government, that's not a crisis.
Yeah.
In the same year, on the figures I've seen, I think it was 539 people over the whole year, many of them, you know, fleeing conflict in Syria or persecution in countries like Iran, traveled to the UK in dinghies. And not only is that a crisis for the country, according to Sajid Javid, it actually warrants the deployment of a battleship in the Channel. I mean, you literally couldn't make this up. No. Well, I stand corrected. The Tories could make it up because, I mean, this is a classic example. I mean, this whole story really is a classic example of creating a so-called crisis from absolutely nothing to deflect the country's attention from little things like 19 million workers on the edge of poverty and the homeless dying on our streets. But look, you know, this is really important, Steve. What happened over Christmas was an opportunity for Sajid Javid, our Home Secretary, to basically shine and help fix this country's moral compass. You know, this week I've heard one man saying we should let these people drown. I've heard another one saying put them in internment. You know, I even heard one say shoot them on the beaches. Sajid Javid could have stood up and he could have said, you know what, we're a nation of compassion. We're a nation that doesn't turn away desperate men and women fleeing for their lives. But instead, what does he do? He decides to make it clear that the Tories' nasty, hostile environment is still alive and kicking. You literally couldn't make it up.
You
just
couldn't.
Extraordinary.
You couldn't, but unfortunately, it's as real as the day is long. And I think this absolving themselves of responsibility and this sort of devoid of humanity attitude is unfortunately what we're going to see. I think it's going to sum up 2019. I'd like to end this on a positive note, Peter, and say that I'm hopeful for 2019. However, I'm sort of gravely concerned. But Peter Stevanovic, as always, it is a pleasure to have you on my podcast.
See,
thank you so
much
for coming
year
back.
Is ours for the taking. Well, it really is. I truly believe that.
I hope you're right. For the moment, Peter, thank you so much for coming on Top
Take
of
Uncaged. Take care, my friend. Lovely to chat, as always.
Taking down this week's BBC QT, it's question time. Topple chirps back. So, question time is still on its Christmas and New Year break. Or rather, I think that Fiona Bruce is waiting to come back from the BBC retraining camp to make sure she's as robotic as Dimblebot was. However, during this interim period, I thought I would pick one of these standout moments of the BBC show from last year. And it comes in the form of a statement from an audience member to David Dimbleby on the 22nd of November. Check this out.
I think in every answer so far, we've had somebody mention councils and the work that councils could do in order to help homelessness. And it's quite clear what the problem is here: chronic underfunding of public services and our local authorities. And this has been a problem ever since this government got in power and started forward with its harsh and inhumane policy of austerity, as the UN pointed out this week. Now, if actual money was put into our public services, maybe this issue wouldn't have got as bad as it has.
Of course, the elephant in the room with that statement was the fact that the audience member brought up the UN report by Special Rapporteur Philip Alston, which no one on the show to that point had even bothered to mention. This was, of course, the findings from Alston, which said that poverty was a political choice in this country, and that ministers were in denial about the extent of the chaos and carnage they were inflicting on society. But the BBC didn't think it was worthwhile mentioning that, nor did they think it was worthwhile picking a question on that subject, which I'm sure there must have been some. However, this is Auntie's modus operandi all over. If it can't distract us with Brexit, then it will just avoid major topics which affect everyone in society, the UN report by Philip Olson being one of them. But moreover, I think this year Question Time needs a complete rethink generally. It's not representative of people at all. If you look at the audience, it's quite often made up of Tory or Labour councillors and those with party political affiliations. Where are the ordinary people who don't necessarily have an interest in politics but know that they have the big questions they need to ask of our politicians and our media? Will we see a shift in Question Time this year? Will it improve? Will it be more representative? Jury's out for me. I don't think Fiona Bruce coming on board is going to make one iota of a difference. So let's see what Question Time brings us next week. And here's this week's banger in Revolutionary Birdsong. Regular listeners to Topple Uncaged will probably be bored of me saying I am so excited by my musical guest, but I am again excited to have this amazing artist on. I reviewed him several times in 2018, and to kick off 2019, I'm joined by the incredible Natty. Natty, thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Ah, you're welcome. Greetings. How's everyone doing?
We're good, thank you. It's lovely to have you here. You had a fantastic 2018, not least the release of Man Like I and I X. It was an incredible album for me, not least because of its eclectic nature. Musically, it was so intricate and so well-developed. It was just a stunning album, really, really fascinating. But what stood out for me was the reworkings of the tracks from the original, which was Man Like I, released a decade ago. There was some stunning work on there. One of the standout tracks for me was Burn This Place Down, which you started off with an excerpt of an address that Akala made at the Oxford Union, and then it kind of went into a sort of jazzy kind of territory, which was somewhat different to the original, which was kind of reggae-laced. I mean, how did these reworkings come about? Was it kind of natural progression for you to do this?
There was two motivations, I would say. I'd say the first motivation was me trying to come up with something to do. Because as a musician, you when you got like 4 or 5 songs on an album and you're like, how are we going to do the rest of it?
Yeah.
And then we ended up going for a 5-a-side competition with with Maloko Studios, and okay, he ended up winning some free studio time. And so we'd had these kind of reworkings, and you know when it's like kind of like a little bit like divine intervention. This was in 2017. After we'd won this studio time, my friend was like, oh, you know it's 2018 next year. You know it's going to be 10 years. Are you going to do that whole 10 years stuff? Like, you know, that whole kind of thing. I saw Carla do it, and it was like, you know, it worked all right for him. I was like, you know, that's not a bad idea, you know. I've got half an album and I've got some free studio time, and me and the band reworked stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Just to answer your question more in a roundabout way, is that when you've been playing the same song for a few years, you, as musicians, you just end up adapting and moving and freestyling. And like, you know, Badman was a completely new sound. Mm-hmm. Burn Down This Place was just a vibes where I wanted, that was more going for like the jazzy, like Dilla kind of drums kind of vibes, and Jay Dilla. Yeah, and then the features, like literally it was a thing where I was like on Burn Down This Place, I was like, oh, you know, I'd really like some saxophone. Mm. Like, what about, there's like loads of new kids coming up doing their thing, Nubia Garcia, a couple few like that. My mate was like, what about Sheyon Kuti? I was like, oh yeah, he plays the sax. Yeah, but it's Sheyon. Why am I going to ask him to come and play the damn sax on the track? Because he's a big artist and he can sing. And I was like, just try him, you never know. So I was like, Sheyon, do you want to come and play some sax on the song? And then he was like, yeah, man, no problem. So I was like, great result. And then it just took ages. It took forever for him to get back to me. Because, yeah, if you've got Nigerian friends, you know what's up. No offense. You know, my son's Nigerian. It's cool. Yeah, like, I'm not going to do that. Oh, I've got a best mate who's Nigerian. No. It's family.
Yeah, Nigerian. So that's for the Tory party.
That's the Toryum, exactly. And then, so the mad thing, basically, we got our wires crossed. He ended up writing a whole new verse, and I was like, wow, all I wanted was some saxophone, you know, bro. But you ended up doing a whole new verse, and then he forgot the saxophone. So he comes to the studio with a new verse and no saxophone. It's like, oh shit, man, I left the saxophone in Germany, man. I'm like, what the f-? So anyway, I go and do the track. I've got a verse. Now I've got to cut one of my verses, which I was cool with because like his voice is amazing. And then we ended up getting a woman from a band called Coco Roco.
Yeah.
Cassie, her name is, and she played sax on it. So yeah, that was how that song come about, and all the different features, everything. It just, everything come about like as it was supposed to. It wasn't like some super great plan. It was just kind of thrown together, and I find that with my life and the way things work with me, just you throw it together, you hope for the best, and you see how it goes.
That is the best story I've had on the podcast so far. That's just amazing. I love it so much. It's brilliant. And it's fascinating that was the background to it, and you feel it was literally thrown together because it is so accomplished. It's such a brilliant piece of music. But also, you're very proud, and there's a very strong Rastafari influence in it that runs through it, and its influence has become stronger last year. last year, in my opinion. I mean, we discussed this before we started recording, and Protégé, for example, Roots, Jamaican artist, his album A Matter of Time has now been nominated for a Grammy, and that's heavily influenced by Rastafari. It's a huge sort of philosophical movement, if you like, but over right. here, especially in the UK, it's very noticeable. It doesn't get any attention, any recognition from sort of the industry, the press as well. Do you think that's going to start changing?
Well, what I would say is that there's two answers to that again. One of them is musically and one of them is socially. So I guess if you're asking the question musically, what I would say is that, well, when you come outside of England, reggae music is probably the biggest category in the world, you know, just outside of England. And so, yeah, it probably is getting the recognition. And even with UNESCO now, what they've just, well, if you don't know,
yeah, get to
know.
Yeah,
not if you don't know, but if you listen, you'll get to know. Yeah, it's protected by United Nations, and it's that much of a inspiring force. And this is reggae music, but what I'm specifically talking about now is Rastafari's influence within reggae music, because the whole conscious element of even a lot of Jamaica is born out of Rastafari philosophy, spirituality, and even socio-political elements of it, because it's not just a spirituality. It was born out of a social and political context that was keeping a lot of people oppressed. Yes. And therefore, the unifying and progressive message that it carries forward is something that you find very heavily in reggae. And so I would say I'm in the world, no, but in England, it's a very strange phenomenon that we're dealing with here. And for the fact that we're in the belly of the beast for so much of Western fuckery, for a better term, I don't know how else to say it, but I see a lot of amazing artists. Like I'm thinking of a couple of friends right now in Harlesden who they're not the punky ska two-tone kind of vibes that this country accepts. You know, they're hardcore Rastafari artists, but they don't get a look in to the scene, and they won't get a look into the scene as long as they stay in this country, I believe.
That's kind of what I was getting at, yeah, because, I mean, you and I both live in London, and we're both acutely aware of how big the scene and how big the movement is within the capital. But as you say, it gets no recognition. I think you're correct. There's an element of the fact that, as you so brilliantly put it, that we're in the belly of the beast, if you like, of the system in this country, because we are. I mean, I think it's overlooked somewhat, actually. Everyone sort of points to the US as the main instigator of so many sort of nefarious policies.
No. The thing about I've travelled all over this world, like, quite a few, like, lengthy time. You know, I've toured America twice, you know, like 20-something dates each. I've done toured, like, all over the world. And the one thing that I would say is that in America, if you can get on, you will get on, yeah? Whereas the thing within this country is that I noticed a few years ago, now I don't want to start bashing the place where I'm from, because there are some great things about this country, specifically musically, and specifically on the creative element of it, maybe not the music industry side of it. But I remember when all of the reggae DJs got taken off the air, every single one, Ras Kwame, Robbo Ranks, even all the dancehall ones. Well, of course, there's not really much space for us. But I'd like to answer the second point, which is the social side of it, which is there is a limitation upon Rastafari organizations. Me, I'm a member of the NNC, which is like the main body, the governing body of essentially Rastafarians in and around Europe. And even just lobbying to try and get a space where we can worship and just practice in peace. Like, it's incredible the fact that British culture is so heavily influenced by Rastafari. I'm not talking about black culture, I'm talking about Rastafari, okay? Because when you look at bass music, and when you look at all the vibrations it comes from, a lot of this started in Jamaica. And when you go to the elements and the roots of this music in Jamaica, a lot of it started with a Rastaman with a Congo drum.
Yeah.
Sitting there, chanting and giving eyes, which is why so much of this music is conscious and so much of it is travels around the world. And so therefore, to answer your question in a long-winded way, no, I don't think it gets the recognition and respect in a more, and I'm not talking musically, because musically I think it does, but in terms of a social and political standing for what we've done for even just this country and this culture, a lot more should be coming our way.
Looking at 2019 and how I view the world as it is now, if you like, I'd like to say I'm positive. However, I'm not. I'm slightly cynical, I'm afraid. I'd like to go, oh, it's 2019, Happy New Year, everything's going to improve, it's going to be wonderful. I don't think it is. And I mean, what are your thoughts? 2018 was on so many levels for us as a species and for our planet, ultimately, was such a disastrous year. Do you see an improvement in 2019?
One thing, whenever someone asks me for advice in terms of what they're going through personally, right? So someone might be like, oh, I just can't get through this thing I'm going through right now. Or like, for example, I had a friend of mine, she's a single mother and she's going through a really dark time. Mm. And I'll say to her what I say to you now, which is like, you gotta go darker. Mm. You're going to have to go deeper. Because the only way you're going to get to the light is by going. You know, it's like any tunnel. You just got to keep going. And at some point it will be the light. Because the one thing that I see is that when we're in bad places, we struggle around. Mm. It's like when you're in deep water. When you start struggling around frantically, you're going to drown quicker.
Yeah.
And so we're in a place where, personally, I'm holding firm. Like, I don't move too much. If you see me, I'm not as vocal as I used to be, maybe outside of the music, because I believe in holding firm. And a lot of the times when you're vocal, people just want to cut you down. Mm. And they want to tell you, oh, yeah, about this. Or what about that? And I was like, no, fuck all of that. Mm. I'm talking about this. So therefore, I don't really speak that much because I'm too much about what's going on and the world and where the world is going. Because the thing I believe is that, no, it's not going to get better overnight. Mm. But I think if we're all holding firm, and what I mean by that is we're all raising our vibration on a spiritual level, we'll all start to see roughly around the same time.
Yeah.
And if everyone is looking at the same thing with the same kind of eyes, then all of a sudden that thing just becomes, let's talk the government, you know, let's talk the Tory party, if we want to get specific or something like that, yeah? If everyone starts seeing them for who and what they are, within a few weeks, they'll probably have to disband.
Mm. Yeah.
If everyone has raised their vibration together and everyone is held firm in their own space,
yeah.
Which is why I always maintain in all the music I do, and every time I get the opportunity to speak live, I'm always talking about people holding their space and trying to better themselves on a spiritual, so that when the time comes for you to observe something that you need to observe and make a judgment on, you're making it from a place of righteousness as opposed to what benefits me and mine.
That's a fascinating insight and very, very, very pertinent at the minute, I think. And I'm cynical. It may be something to do with somewhere I'm at personally at the moment. But I think you are right. I mean, there are sort of chinks of light. For you as an artist, then, to wrap up, what's in store for 2019? What can we expect from Natty?
You know, I don't like talking too much. About what I'm gonna do,
right? Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's like, no.
If you start talking about what you're gonna do, and then you change your mind, or something falls down, or whatever it is, you know exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. So
I do.
What I would say is that there'll definitely be new music.
Okay.
Even if it's just like some of the freestyles and stuff that I've been doing, just trying to better myself and do more music, break down some horizons. Yeah. And yeah, music is my tool, music is my weapon. So yeah, I'm just going to keep it going.
Excellent. I don't know why you say you don't speak much, because you should be speaking more. Natty, it was absolutely fascinating speaking to you. Real, real pleasure. Natty, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much. All right, blessings.
And from Natty's fantastic album, I cannot recommend it enough. It is absolutely stunning. Man Like I and I X, released last year. This is one of the standout tracks for me. It is called One People. Natty, One People.
I found a lion inside of me in the mountains of Lesotho. Raindrops on my face, the fire burn and the wind blow. And these are the changing days, the old shame and the saves. No more dividing, gotta find a new way. He said we ought to come from Mama Africa. That makes your enemy a brother, son. Now tell me what you wanna do. One love, one heart, one people. One love, one heart, one people. One love, one heart,
an aisle. Me and some brothers, we getting high. Laughing and joking at our differences, different ways of life in our day-to-day lives. Meanwhile, the waters keep flowing, the waters of creation. But me and my brothers all agree on one thing. We all come from the same place, with the same sun. One love, one heart, one people.
And that's it. Episode 8 of Top Lung Caged is done. I would like to thank my fantastic guests this week, the incredible Peter Stevanovic. Follow him on Twitter. It's at PeterStevanov2. And the amazingly talented Natty. Follow him on Twitter. It's at NattyMusic. As always, behind the scenes, thank you to my gorgeous girlfriend, the incredible Nicola Jeffrey. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Nicola C. Jeffrey. And my in-house singer, it's Ray Star Music. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Ray_Star113. Last but not least, thank you to the Canary for uncaging me. As always, don't forget, become a member. Join us. It's www.canary.co. Otherwise, that's it. I'm off to have a lie down. See you next week.
Uncaged.